This is a podcast from Minute Media.
What is up, everybody? Welcome to Comic Book Club. I'm Alex.
I'm Pete.
And we're coming to you live from a couple of places on the internet. We're live over on YouTube, the old tubes. We're also live on Crowdcast, or maybe we're coming to you later as an audio podcast. Wherever you get your audio podcasts, that's all good. Thank you for listening. Thank you for tuning in. We appreciate it. As you may notice, Justin, our third host, is off today. He's once again traveling across the United States.
It's hard being a line producer. You got to get those lines straight. You know
exactly.
What I mean?
Well, that's the thing, is they're doing that show where they walk straight across the United States, I believe.
Yeah.
And he has to make sure they're in a line, because that's what a line producer does.
And they're drinking in the desert right now, right? Drinking the cactus juice.
We don't want to spoil what's going on with the show. He is actually working on a show. It's pretty cool. I think he talked about it in the podcast before, but
yeah.
Whatever it is, we're not going to spoil the big events that happen in it. Hopefully he should be back from, I believe, Hawaii next week.
Let's see what happens. It's nice being Justin, I tell you what.
Yeah. He's just relaxing, having some Mai Tais, and that's pretty much it.
That's all he does.
Speaking of which, we should move it over to the drinking portion of our show now. As frequent listeners / watchers know, Stray Bullet, Brett Macris,
Stray Bullies,
our CBC chef, has been choosing, curating, and designing drinks for every week on the show. Now, on the Stack podcast, I believe last week, Justin talked about this TV show called Johnny Bago that, through a little bit of research, we discovered was on for like 3 months or something like that and got stuck in his memory. So Brett designed a drink. I'm just going to pull it up here, called Justin's Bago.
Ah,
there you go.
Don't give that guy any more ego. He doesn't need it.
It's a pretty good drink, though. It's bourbon or whiskey, sweet vermouth, Averna Amaro, Fernat Branca, Peychaud's Bitters, and 2 Luxardo cherries or Amarena cherries. I didn't have all of that, so I made a Boulevardier, which is about half those ingredients. But I'm going to try to aim for next week to make the Bago, because Brett's been making some great drinks.
I knew what 2 of those ingredients in that were.
One of them is ice. Do you know what ice is?
Yeah, or 3. My bad.
Okay, there we go. Pete, what are you drinking tonight? What's going on?
Well, usually we talk about that later, but I'm drinking a little vodka and a little ginger, a little vodka ginger. Mm.
Ginger ale, not like pure raw cut ginger, right?
Oh, yeah. No, I get the straight cut of ginger. I just slice it into my drink, thin slice.
I mean, that wouldn't be terrible. You could try it.
I've definitely had the roots in there and vodka before.
That's great. That's great news. I'm glad to hear it. Thank you, Pete. Tell you what, why don't we move on from this and bring our amazing guest into the feed here. We're big fans of his.
Just be cool, all right?
I'll be the one who needs to be cool. He is currently writing on Punisher, Avengers Forever, and a bunch of other books. Ladies and gentlemen, Jason Aaron, hello.
Well, how are you? I didn't know we were drinking, so I ran to get a drink real quick.
Oh, nice. Wait, good, what are you drinking? What do you have?
I got just some Angel's Envy rye. It's rye finished in Caribbean rum cask.
Ooh.
It's really
good. Nice. That was lovely.
And, in a little Thor glass.
I love it.
Yeah,
that's awesome. Cool. I also love your shirt. That's a very cool shirt. Yeah. Little candle fingers and everything.
Oh, thanks. This is a wrestling shirt. Malachi Black, who used to be Aleister Black. This is an Aleister Black shirt from when he was in WWE, but now he's in AEW.
Nice.
Oh, yeah.
While we're talking about logos and insignias, why don't we jump right into it and talk about Punisher, who has gotten a big redesign. Now, Pete is a resident Punisher fan. I know he was, like a lot of Punisher fans, a little iffy about changing up the classic Skull logo. But at the same time, we love the first issue. I don't want to speak for you, Pete, but I thought it was awesome. I know you've talked about this a lot, but what went into the redesign? Obviously, there's a big story behind the redesign. There's been a lot of discussion about it. But from your perspective, where did that germ start to go from, maybe we should think about changing the Punisher skull logo, to actually starting to become a reality?
I mean, those are kind of two different questions, I guess. I mean, part of it is the, of course, for a while, there have been all sorts of questions and discussions about the Punisher, sort of inside Marvel, outside Marvel. What does this character mean now? How do we do stories with this character? What do we, you know, what does that skull mean? So there was all sorts of stuff swirling around. But for me, really, it was just about telling a story. I mean, I kind of stepped forward in the midst of one of our Marvel retreats as these questions are all circulating around the room. And I said, look, I have an idea. Like, I wasn't really prepared to pitch it that day, but I was like, how about we do this? You know, and I basically pitched the story that we're now doing, which I think is, again, started not me coming in saying, hey, that, you know, the skull's a problem, this is a problem, mm-hmm. that's a problem, this is a way to fix that or address that. It definitely started with me saying, this is an idea I have. I think this can address some of the things we have concerns about without just being a story that changes this character to another character. It was never about that. It was very much about who is this guy? Who is this character? What does he mean? Not what does he mean to people who, you know, appropriate that symbol or all the other questions swirling around about him, but what has he meant in the pages of the stories that we've been telling about him for, you know, four decades, however long it's been.
Well, that's I don't mean to cut you off.
No, you can never answer everybody's questions and concerns sure. about all that fully, and people will kind of believe what they want to believe. And same thing with Thor. I mean, I think when I was doing Jane Foster Thor, people assume, well, Marvel must have told you to do this or that. And I've never written a story that somebody forced me to do, you know?
Smart.
And Punisher is the same thing. Like, this is a story I wanted to tell. And the skull changing, you know, is very much a part of that story, but it is not about changing who Frank Castle is. If anything, it is about drilling down to answer that question of who he has always been, what led him to this point. And as he takes kind of that next step in his evolution, we see why and see that the threads go back to, you know, to why he became the Punisher in the first place.
Well, that's what's so exciting is, you know, as somebody who's a Punisher fan and a huge fan of your writing, I'm very excited to see what's going to happen because, you know, I know or think I understand a little bit about, like, what Frank Castle is about and what motivates him and what kind of drives him. So that was what's so exciting about the kind of first issue. And, you know, and a lot of people are asking me, what do you think? And I was kind of in shell shock from it because we know what happened to Frank and why he turned into the Punisher. So, you know, to me, it's he wanted to protect, like, okay, nobody has to go through this again. If I kind of wipe out the bad guys, you know, people can have picnics and enjoy their loved ones.
Right.
And I can try to help and make it better. But the fact that, like, now we see him kind of, you know, back with his with the love of his life, what does that mean for the other side? And what does that mean for what he is? And just the fact that, like, he doesn't have to work so hard. Like, they're bringing him the bad people and he can just sit there and have them lined up for him is insane. And it was kind of like, it's been a while since I've read a first, you know, usually first issues are great. They set up a world, get things kind of set up, and you're excited for more. But I was kind of floored of, like, I have no idea what this means for this character.
Pete, I love that clearly you've been sitting on this monologue all day and you got all of your thoughts together in one place. That's awesome.
I'm just kind of talking just from the reaction of reading.
Yeah. Well, I mean, to get to what you were talking about a little earlier, Jason, though, and to wrap up a little bit of what Pete's talking about, one of the things that I really loved about this issue, we don't have this page up right now, but you almost started off with the all-star Superman intro of the Punisher, just like this very simple, very direct intro. What went into crafting that? How difficult was it to really distill down who the Punisher was in a few simple pages?
You mean, which parts do you mean? Just like the I mean, we open with like the flashback and then.
Yeah, the very beginning of the issue, you start, for anybody who hasn't read it, you start with the picnic, but not. You never see it's Frank. You never see its wife. It's just all very like close ups of pieces and bodies and things. And then you have this double page splash of just the Punisher throughout history. What went into building that?
Yeah, I mean, I wanted to open with a flashback to that day in the park, which I mean, as you kind of alluded to, makes more sense by the time you get to the end of the issue. I mean, I guess if you know, you should maybe stop listening now if you don't want to know more about Punisher number one, and that there's kind of a big shock at the end of it. But so I needed to kind of, I mean, we all know, you know, we all know the origin, we all know what happened, but I wanted to remind you a little bit of what went on, but also to do something that was more visceral and was very much from Frank's point of view. You know, those three or four pages, however long it is, they're all, we're looking through Frank's eyes in that, you know. And that leads into that moment as he, as his wife has just died, he falls. We see as his eyes are closing, they're either, I like the idea that it goes red, right? It's not just he closes his eyes and it's all black. The page turns red. There's blood seeping into his eyes, or he closes his eyes and all he sees is red. Either way, that leads into, you know, the paramedics are asking him, trying to keep him awake, trying to keep him talking, asking him like, who, you know, what's your name? Who are you? Who are you? And that leads into, like you said, this double page spread where I just said, look, let's pull awesome images from, you know, 40 years worth of Punisher stories and show you this is the answer to that question, right? Like the, he answered that question by becoming the Punisher, by becoming this guy. And that's who he's been for decades. And we see what he's been doing. And then that, you know, you flip the page and it's like next chapter, right? Like this is where that character goes next. Mm-hmm. Just to drive home, like, because you know, believe me, like I've heard all the concerns from people as soon as we showed that symbol, which I knew, as soon as we announced it and we showed it's a different symbol, I knew what that reaction would be. Oh, they're changing the Punisher because of this, because of that. So I wanted you to see from the opening of this issue, it's the guy you know, it's that same story we've been telling. Yeah. It's continuing on. We're not just flipping the script and making him somebody he's never been before. It's the same dude. He's going through some different stuff than he's been through before, but it all has roots back in the character that I'd say know and love. I feel weird saying I love the Punisher. I do.
Hey, sorry.
I'm this fascinated by that. He's one of those characters that I, you know, I'm deeply interested in and also terrified of. You know, I'd never certainly never want to have a beer with, right? Like Thor, that I'd love to have a beer with Thor. Oh, that'd be awesome. Frank Castle, not so much.
Well, I mean, given that, and Pete was talking about this a little bit then, what do you think the appeal of the Punisher is?
Well, I mean, it's the, I think you can look at that kind of over the evolution over the decades, right? Like, I think we most think of him kind of equating with that sort of vigilanteism of that became so big in the 80s, you know, like kind of the Death Wish sort of story of like, this is the guy who won't take any more shit, who will stand up to the worst of the worst and deal with them in a way, you know, they quote unquote need to be dealt with, right? Like law aside, you know, who sees the world in very simple terms, right? To Frank Castle, there is black and there is white. And that is it. There's no gray, you know, like you cross this line, I'm going to kill you and you're going to be dead. And that's it. End of story. No discussion. So I think there's always something attractive about that, some sort of wish fulfillment of that. But I think the way I've always looked at the Punisher, and I think the way I wrote him in the Punisher Max series I did, and this is sort of like you guys were saying, Frank doesn't see himself as a role model or a hero. If anything, he does this job so nobody else has to do it, but he knows this is a road you don't want to go down. Like, do not follow me, guys, right? Like, yeah. It's not a good path. And you know, however that path goes for him, there's no happy ending. There's no rainbow at the end of it, right? Like, nothing good things the perfect happy ending does not await Frank Castle. So I think to me, the thing I've enjoyed the most about writing this series so far, which I've written 7 or 8 issues at this point, like we're really far ahead on it, is what comes from the ending, like you said, from that surprise at the end of issue 1. That's sort of a different scenario than we've seen for Frank. And I don't think you can assume right away you know how that scenario is going to play out. It's been very fun exploring that, and what that means for Frank and what that means for the other person involved, you know, who has never really had a voice before in the pages of the comics.
That's true.
Well, why don't we, I'll give a big spoiler warning here for anybody who hasn't read the first issue, if it's okay. Since it's been out for a while, I think we can talk about the idea. If you don't want to know, tune out, check out.
Whatever you guys want to do.
The awesome ending here, the big twist, is that Frank Castle is working for the Hand. The reason it seems he's working for the Hand is they have managed to resurrect his wife. She is in his bed at the end. So, in my impression, again, based on one issue, is that essentially you're challenging Frank on both ends. You have him working for the Hand. He's killing murderers. He's killing rapists. He's killing all these terrible people. But he's also working for one of the most evil organizations in the Marvel Universe. So you're challenging him on that end. And the other end, by bringing back his wife, even though you're giving what he wants, you're challenging his whole reason for doing this in the first place. So is that kind of on the right track in terms of maybe how we're heading down the road?
Yes, I would say yes on both of those fronts. I think Frank sees the Hand as a weapon, right? Like as a weapon he can use to fight his war. He's still, like you said, he's still fighting the same war. He's still killing the same guys he was killing before. Now he can kill them in bigger numbers.
Yeah.
And we also see, because Maria is by his side, again, he has something to kind of fight to protect and a reason to want to maybe actually end his war once and for all, right? Like to ride off into the sunset. I think that raises all kind of questions. And as for the, we kind of get a tease and you get more info in the second issue of why the Hand is doing this. Sort of why they see Frank Castle as, the guy who needs to be their new High Slayer, who needs to be the model that they should follow. We get a lot more of that in issue 2. We will explore all those questions. The people have asked, like we've kind of seen over the years, we've seen teases of where some bad guy would dig up Frank's wife and child, and you'd get a sort of brief image of them resurrected in some sort of zombified, horrified form, and Frank would set him on fire and kill the guy, or just...
I remember that, yeah.
That's happened a couple of times. So the question is, why is this different? We will answer that as we go. I think you can... you'll see right away of Maria is back. She's not a zombie. That last image, which I love, what Jesus did on that last page. Of,
oh, yeah, the art's great.
I say thanks. I didn't draw shit, but yeah, they drew the Jesus and Paul both drew the hell out of this series. But Maria is covered in bullet scars, right? Like she was riddled with bullets, which again we saw in those opening couple of pages. That's not going away. It's not like she's who she was before that day in the park. She is the same woman who was gunned down in the park that day and still covered with those scars. So the big question going into issue 2 is, what the hell does she think of all this? What does she understand about any of this? And those are questions that are, I'm having a lot of fun answering as we go.
Well, I can't wait. I'm so excited. But you had mentioned...
Thank you guys for digging it. I appreciate it.
Oh, man, so excited. So you had mentioned you had, like, an idea. You weren't kind of ready yet, but something was kind of brewing of, like, oh, I have this idea for Punisher while you were at the kind of Marvel conference. How do you kind of, like, create ideas? Do you kind of, like, does it start with you see something that kind of, like, clicks for you, or do you kind of, like, take characters and kind of spin them out a little bit, or, like, how did this kind of a germ start?
I mean, just ideas in general, it depends. Like, they're all kind of different in terms of how they start. Sometimes things just kind of come out of the blue. Sometimes I sit down, like with when I started Thor, I said, okay, I think I want to write Thor, and just sat down. I need to figure out a Thor idea. So I think with this Punisher story, I had written Punisher Max years ago, which I had a lot of fun with. But that, it had Kingpin and it had Bullseye in it, but it was still, it was a different world, right? It was the Max universe. So I'd never really written Frank in a big way in the Marvel universe. And I, to my mind, kind of since you look at the evolution of that character and kind of everything led to, in my mind, those 60 or so issues of Punisher Max that Garth Ennis did, which was sort of like, really defined who that character is. And to me, the question has always been like, what do you do next? It's like doing a Western the day after Unforgiven came out. It's like, how do we do this? And I think the real challenge is, how do you do that in the Marvel universe? How do you do that in a world that's got Spider-Man in it? And I think we've seen a lot of great stories, by from Greg Rucka and Matt Rosenberg's run. You've seen a lot of writers tackle that challenge. But I'd never really tried to tackle that because I'd never really written Frank in any significant way in the Marvel U. And then I wrote him in War of the Realms. I added him to War of the Realms, which I thought, big, huge war story. It makes sense to have Frank in that. And I liked, first time I wrote Frank and Wolverine, chatting with each other, which I think is just page of their big reunion, like them catching up. I think that's kind of what just got me thinking of like, if I was going to do a Punisher in the Marvel U story, what would that be? And I wanted to do something like, can I do a story that, has that same darkness and grittiness and the sort of emotional power of that character, like you get from the Max stuff, but to do that while also enmeshing the character in the toys of the Marvel U. So I came up with like two or three ideas out of that, and this was the one I liked the most. But I think that's kind of where it all came from.
I mean, on that note, given that he is in the Marvel U now, he is not in charge of the Hand, but working for the Hand. And you do have other characters like Daredevil, who used to run the Hand. You have other characters like Spider-Man, who are constantly coming into conflict with him in different ways. Are we going to see him colliding with the rest of the Marvel Universe going forward? Or is this more still self-contained, focused on the Punisher, focused on the Hand, focused on what they're doing?
I mean, I think you'll just have to wait and see. I would say, Frank Castle being with the Hand, leading a group of Hand ninjas around the world, I think if people find out about that, that would raise some attention among the other heroes. We'll just have to see. We got 12 issues to play with. Like I said, I'm more than halfway through at this point. And it only gets darker and crazier as it goes.
And this is another thing that probably is way too far afield, but I'll ask it anyway. Obviously, it's an open question. You could never say like this is permanently the way it is forever in comics, because that's
right
for comics. But is this the sort of thing like it's just these 12 issues and then he's going to go back to the Skull and he's going to go back to Punisher? Or is there a ... potentially going further than that, as this might be his new ongoing status quo?
Well, I mean, that's a difficult question to answer in a couple ways. One, this is much of, this is a 12 issue series that we're doing that is very much one big story. So without telling you how that ends, I can't really answer that. In my mind, if the Punisher disappears forever after issue 12 of this, or I die the day after it comes out, and I never get to write this character again. Thank you for being sad of my favorite. I appreciate it. But if I never write this character again, I think I would be okay. Like I'm trying to feel like this is my one time at bat to write this guy in a big way in the Marvel universe. I want to put everything I want to do in these 12 issues, say everything I want to say. That's not to say I wouldn't ever want to write the character again, but I feel like if I needed to walk away after this, or if that character disappears forever, I'm just trying to make this the biggest, most powerful Punisher story, you know, we can possibly do.
That's awesome.
So you've written a lot of amazing stories. We've loved a lot of different kind of adventures that you've gone on. Like, what is it that really still makes you the happiest as a writer in comics? Is it like getting back the first time you see the drawings of after you send a script? Is it the initial idea that kind of gets you excited? Is it, you know, just like seeing your name on the cover of a comic book, which to me would feel like the greatest joy of ever. But, you know, for you, what is it that really kind of like gets you going?
I mean, all of those are still cool. Like none of them have gotten old. Like I haven't gotten jaded about any of that stuff. It's all still weird and surreal. You know, drive to my local comic book shop and see books that I wrote on the shelf that never get sold. So all those things still make me happy, but I think for me the happiest part of it is still the writing itself. Like I've never been one of those writers who's kind of glad to have written. Like I like writing. The act of writing itself to me is like I don't know, it makes me happy. It makes me feel like a healthy, functioning person. I don't think it's an exaggeration to say it's like a fundamental part of like who I am and what I do. And probably has been since I was, you know, like 12 years old. So I love that. Like it's a very solitary job. I sit here by myself. I type up this thing that's really just for me. Like I'm doing a comic that I enjoy, that I want to read. I can't control what anybody else thinks, right? I don't know how to write a comic for you guys. I don't know how to write a comic for anybody else except for me. I know what I like and what makes me happy and what I respond to emotionally. And the hope is that if I feel that way about it, if I like it, if I feel affected by it, hopefully other people out there will as well, right? And generally they do. But you can't control that. To me, it's still just a very solitary, kind of selfish job. I'm kind of just doing shit to make myself happy. And everything that I genuinely feel like everything that happens after that, like once I turn that script in, everything else is kind of just gravy, you know? I mean, the thing actually getting drawn by these amazing artists and becoming a book that people buy and respond to, and that becoming a job that, you know, pays my light bill. All of those things are great and amazing, and I love them to death. But it kind of all starts with just that joy and happiness that I get from doing the thing in the first place, you know? And hopefully I feel that way up until I die. I mean, hopefully I'm still doing that. Hopefully I die writing. Like, that's my plan. Wow. It's just not anytime soon.
As far as I heard, hopefully the day after the Punisher, right after you're done with the Punisher.
Then. Don't put that out there like that.
I don't know. I'm just saying. all this fun you're talking about, though, I think that actually segues nicely into talking about Avengers, because we've talked about, I think, every issue so far of Avengers Forever. And one of the things that we almost constantly bring up when we're talking about the book on our Stack podcast is it feels in the absolute best way like you're playing with a box of toys that you have and just bring them out and sometimes like switching the heads a little bit and mixing them together. And it's just so much fun. It's so joyful to read. It's nice to hear. That's clearly what's coming through the writing process as well.
Thanks. Yeah. I mean, that's the idea. I with Avengers, I wanted to play with like the biggest, coolest toys in the toy box in the Marvel universe, right? Not just the characters we've got on the team, but everybody else we could add to the mix, and just make each arc feel big, you know, like an event level challenge like it needs to when you're dealing with such a powerful group of characters. So it's been, you know, it's been a crazy time over the course of that Avengers run, just everything that's happened. Yeah. I think with everybody working on the book, with the world at large, like it's all been a strange time. So it's, if anything, you know, the last couple of years have made me double down on trying to make the book more fun. You know, I didn't want to, this doesn't need to be a book that represents the world outside our window. Right. Like, I do think I realized at some point that I'd kind of been writing a team book that still felt in some way to be about isolation. So I think you can parse that out yourself in the pages of the book. But if anything, I've just doubled down to try to make it even more fun and bigger and bigger, and you know, adding Avengers Forever to the mix and working with Aaron Cooter and getting to do all these different, you know, multiversal versions of different characters. We're kind of throwing all that together, and you'll there you go. That's an awesome cover by Aaron.
So
yeah, I mean, the art really reflects the kind of brightness and fun of it. I mean, you're just looking at that, and it's just it sets such a great tone for your writing.
Yeah, really, Aaron's awesome. I have been, like, he and I have talked about working together for years, and we haven't until this. I did become suspicious at some point that he really just wanted to work with me so that when our last names were on the cover of the book, it would say that it was by Aaron Cooter. but it has still worked out well. And you know, whether you've been reading Avengers so far or not, I think everything that I've been doing for, you know, now 50 plus issues in Avengers and this first arc in Avengers Forever, that all will start to smash together in a really gigantic way later this year, come this fall. And as I've kind of talked about, you know, the threads that lead into that story are not just threads from those 50 issues of Avengers, but threads that go back through the, you know, the 6-7 years I wrote Thor, back to when I wrote Wolverine for 6 years, back to Ghost Rider, which was my first you know, ongoing gig at Marvel. You kind of very much seeing characters and elements from those arcs, those runs, all leading into what I'm doing later this year with the Avengers.
And we definitely saw that in the last issue of Avengers Forever, which was so cool and brought in those things you're talking about, the Wolverine of it all, the Thor run of it all. I did specifically want to ask you about centering Robbie Ray's Ghost Rider. What is appealing about that character in particular to you? Because he seems, at least in the first arc of Avengers Forever, maybe the most important person in the multiverse.
Yeah, you know, I clearly have an affinity for the Ghost Riders. I loved my run on that series years ago. Loved writing Blaze and Ketch back then. I was always more, like, growing up, I was more a Johnny Blaze guy. I didn't read as much of the Ketch stuff when it was coming out. But I liked, once I started Avengers, I knew I wanted to put a Ghost Rider on the team kind of from the get-go. Before I even had Avengers, like, whenever I'd think about my Avengers lineup, it had a Ghost Rider in it. Even though as the Ghost Rider writer, I always felt like that character functioned best being off in their own corner, you know, to do those kind of Ghost Rider stories like I wanted to do. But I wanted to do something different, like, and Robbie was the perfect character for that because he was new. He's a different kind of Ghost Rider. His origin, you know, didn't seem to be the same as the other guys. His powers were different. He drives this badass car instead of a motorcycle. And like I said, he's the kid. He's the new guy. Like, he's just been fighting crime around the streets of L.A. You know, he's never hung around with Iron Man and Captain America and Thor. He's never been into space. He's never been to these other dimensions. So I liked him being sort of the new, fresh face on the team. And then, yeah, part of that has been exploring, like, what makes him different? What are his powers? And we're starting to see more of that, like you said, in Avengers Forever, and realizing, like, oh, this guy is you know, not just that he can sort of grab your car keys and hop in your car and turn it into a Ghost Rider ride. Like, his powers are quite a step beyond that. So, like, we kind of send him and Tony Stark flying around in the, you know, Ghost in Robbie's Hell Charger, flying through space and through different dimensions, sort of, you know, a bit of like a crazy Rick and Morty sort of adventure with those dudes. So I love just him, you know, driving his car between universes. And that's really just the beginning of what we'll see that Robbie can do. So Robbie's a big part of everything that I'm doing in Avengers going forward. And it's leveling the character up, but again, also trying to be true to who that character has always been, you know, who he was created to be in the pages of his own book.
Yeah. We got a couple of comments and questions here that I wanted to read through. First of all, a couple of shout outs for Jane Foster, Thor. Ben the Border Collie says, Jason, just want to tell you that your Mighty Thor is my favorite run in superhero comics. You helped Jane Foster become a wonderfully realized character. I have a Mjolnir tattoo because her story resonated so much with me. No questions, just a thank you.
So do I.
There we go. And Stray Bullet adds to double down on Ben's statement, Jane Foster is my favorite Thor. What's it like to see this, not just this ongoing love for the character, but also obviously Natalie Portman's going to be here in the movie. She showed up in cartoons and books and everything like this. So to see that sort of thing blowed out, what's that experience been like for you?
Oh, it's been, you know, amazing the whole time, like from when we were doing the book to even now, like the response to that, the whole Jane Foster story has been really special. It's been really, you know, deeper and more emotional than probably anything else I've ever done. Certainly anything I've done at Marvel. You know, that was the first time I ever did signings for a book where people would be crying and I would start crying and everybody's crying. And, you know, I cried writing that last issue, issue of her, the death of the Mighty Thor. Like, there was a page that made me cry when I wrote it, and then I sent it off, and Russell cried while he was drawing it, and probably Matt cried while he was coloring it. and again, that kind of goes back to what I was talking about of how I'm doing. I just want to do stuff that affects me emotionally. And that absolutely did. And I think it affected everybody who worked on that book and so many people who've read it. And that still blows me away, the response to that, and, you know, blows me away that they're doing this movie, and I'm super excited with what's going on there. And just excited to, you know, buy all the new Jane Foster Thor toys and statues that come out this year and add them to my guest room. Is like it's like the Jason Aaron Presidential Library. It's like all full of books I wrote and just toys and statues from shit I've done. It's like, I mean, it's pretty, I think nobody can stand to sleep in there except my mom. She loves it. It's like my mom's room.
Are you going to get a cameo in the movie like Kelly Sue DeConnick and Captain Marvel? Did you insist?
I wish. Yeah. Taika hasn't called me, you know, to get my cameo yet, but I don't know. I felt like I could be a Viking or, you know, the god of beards, seriously, something like that.
Yes,
that
absolutely.
We'll see.
Here's a question from.
Sorry, go. What?
You could be hanging out at the bar, you know, and just kind of give Thor one of those. You know what I mean?
Right. Thor could punch me in the face, like whatever.
This is from Jolene here in the comments on Crowdcast. Question for Jason, based entirely on the Malachi Black shirt, what wrestler would be best suited for a comic book adventures like El Santo?
It's a great question. You know, I think I tweeted some point years back that I would love to write a Bray Wyatt comic back when he was still with WWE. He's not wrestling anywhere right now, but I would have absolutely done that if WWE wanted to hire me. Like these days, I don't know. I mean, I'm you know, I'm mostly an AEW guy these days. I'd still love Malachi Black and the House of Black. Those guys are awesome. I'd do a book about them. I'd do a Darby Allin comic. I don't know. I feel like it'd be fun to write MJF in a comic to write a guy that's that much of an asshole. Like, God, it takes me, but like when I watch him, I remember being a kid and watching wrestling, and I was, Ric Flair would make me so mad. Like, I hated that guy so much. Like, it just, he would make me angry from me, like, watching him on TV, which now I look back and like, holy shit, like, how amazing was that? And to see, like, that guy, to be able to do that today in a way that really most other wrestlers aren't as, like, old school hated as MJF. Like, I went to see AEW when they were in town a couple months ago, and the show was amazing. At one point, I'm like, man, I really got to piss. So I hop over the barricade to, like, go to the bathroom, and then MJF's music hits, and I was like, shit. Like, I can hold it. I can hold it. Like, I can't miss this. It was great. So yeah, I'm a huge, huge wrestling fan. I'd write a CM Punk comic. That would be fun. I mean, it'd be weird since I've, you know, had coffee with him, but
that's a comic that. Right there. Just sitting down, having coffee with CM Punk.
Right.
We got a question here about The Goddamned from Edward Doherty. Any more The Goddamned soon? That's a great book.
Yeah, I wouldn't say soon, but yeah, there'll definitely be more. That's the plan. I mean, the idea has kind of always been with The Goddamned that it's not really one linear story. It's sort of different stories. It's all set within the same world, you know, the world of the pre-flood biblical world, a world that's so completely fucked up and crazy and out of control that God looks down and is like, we're just going to fucking kill everybody and start over. So, I mean, that's the premise of The Goddamned, and the idea is we'll just jump around and do different stories. And, you know, we've done the two volumes so far, and you kind of see at the end of the second one how it connects to the first. And so there'll be more stuff like that. Not exactly sure what that'll be next, if we're looking at doing another mini series or maybe something more anthology style with a lot of different shorter stories. Like, I kind of have different ideas I'd like to do within that world. And Gera, you know, who I did the first two with, is busy doing other stuff right now. I think you can see, especially from that second volume, like how much he puts into that, the art on that series. Like, it's really pretty staggering.
I'm curious, because you've mentioned a couple of times with other books that while we've been talking that, like, it's fun and you're having fun doing this, but The Goddamned is a book, even if there are big action sequences, at the end of every issue, it's like, hey, you think this is bad? It's worse. It's getting terrible. So does that take you to a darker place, or is there still something fun in terms of putting these characters through the ringer?
I mean, you know, it's definitely a very dark and pessimistic book, I suppose it does take me to dark places at times, but absolutely. I mean, I think there's a lot of stuff in there that gives me joy. I mean, from part of it's like, I love caveman comics, you know, from Devil Dinosaur to Tor to anything that's dudes killing each other with sticks and stones and running around with dinosaurs. I love all those books. So, I mean, this is me doing a caveman comic pretty much, right? Like, it's, all the weapons are made out of bone or sharpened rocks, and there's all sorts of strange monsters running around. I also love, apocalyptic stories, and this is very much like the very first end of the world story, right? Mm-hmm. So I think there's stuff like, I love Lone Wolf and Cub. I love samurai stories. I think you can see a lot of different things that make me happy sprinkled into The Goddamned in the midst of all the really, really horrible events that are happening and a really dark view of the world. But again, like, I didn't make this story up, right? I didn't create this premise. I'm just adapting it from the Bible. Like, if you think it's too dark, well... you could email the writers of the Bible and complain to them.
And one other one that you have going right now is King Conan is happening, and that is awesome. I've been having a blast reading the book. I do have one big question for you, though. Is it's King Conan, and immediately he leaves his kingdom and goes somewhere else. So why sure. that choice?
Well, that's a fair question. I mean, I think there's kind of two narratives playing out over the course of this book, right? Like there's the sort of the present day of it, of King Conan, where he sort of sailing beyond the known maps of Hyborian civilization and seeing what else is out there and kind of going on, you know, one last hurrah. And then there's the story of why he left that throne. And we've kind of just gotten a little bit of that so far. You get the next issue 4 is very much about that, of sort of what happened. And it's really a story about a father and a son. You know, I liked writing scenes with Conan and Conan II, Prince Khan. And next issue really dives into what that relationship is like. What's it like to have Conan as a dad? Hmm.
And before we let you go, is there anything else you're working on that you want to plug? I mean, we've obviously talked about a lot, but anything else happening?
Well, I think that's everything I've kind of got going on right now that that we can talk about. I will say that what else? I feel like I'm forgetting something. But I do. I got a story in the next issue of Thor. Is it Thor number 24, I think?
Mm-hmm. I think so.
So me going back to Thor for a little bit, sort of, you know, it's a big issue. It's got stories by, of course, Donny Cates and Nick Klein, the current Thor team, but Walt Simonson and J. Michael Straczynski. Oh, wow. It's like a, you know, murderer's row of Thor creators. So I got to do a little story with Das Pastoris, who I worked with on God of Thunder. He drew the really great, it's like the Thor getting drunk with dragons story. So I got to work with him again on a story that kind of ties into stuff I've been doing in Avengers. It focuses on, you know, the prehistoric Odin. Awesome. And his relationship with the hammer. But yeah, other than that, like you said, I'm been working on King Conan, Punisher just started, Avengers Forever going forward. I can't tell you what it is or even where it is, but last week or week before that, just within the last 2 weeks, I wrote the first issue of a new creator-owned book.
Ooh.
That hopefully would be out before the end of the year. We'll see. Which felt really, really good. Which again is like kind of one of those things that's very different than anything else I've done before. But it'll be exciting to talk about it once we can talk about it. I've been doing some other stuff outside of comics, which has been cool. And I don't know, you know, it's been, been a strange couple of years for all of us, right? Like me included. I think being cocooned for so long and then, you know, starting to emerge from the cocoon and look around and take state of the world and of myself and my life and my work and all that sort of stuff. I think I'm still figuring all that out and kind of what that'll look like going forward, but I think the idea for me at least is you'll start to see a little more balance between my work for hire stuff and my creator owned stuff. The creator owned part sort of dropped off a little bit for me, say certainly in the last, you know, year. So you'll definitely see that pick up more. I don't know. I'm really excited about the stuff I've got going on. You know, I think when I started Thor was one example of where I could feel like, okay, I'm doing this book at the right time. This is the right book for me at this moment in time. I felt that way as soon as I started Punisher, right in that first issue of Punisher. I feel that way about that creator-owned book that I wrote, you know, 2 weeks ago. I feel that about all the new stuff I've got coming up. So It feels good to emerge from the cocoon and see people again. I feel like I've forgotten how to speak to people. So thank you for being patient with me tonight.
No problem.
So, yeah.
Oh. Awesome. Jason, thank you so much for taking the time. Loving the books and looking forward to whatever this creator-owned thing is, as well as everything else.
Cool. Thanks all you guys. Thanks, everybody, for listening.
Have a good night.
Yeah. Take care of yourself.
All right. There we go. Jason Aaron. Oh, man. Stuff to check out, as he mentioned. Punisher, Avengers Forever. You can check out The Goddamned, which is a great book. Like we said, very dark. And King Conan, among everything else that he publishes, which is super cool. Pete, you doing all right? You okay there?
Yeah, I'm just, I'm just so excited. He gave us just a little bit of a tease of what's coming in the Punisher 12 issues that I'm very, very,
yeah,
very
that first issue, about. If anybody hasn't picked it up, I mean, Pete, you're obviously a Punisher fan who was a little bit nervous about this run. I'm not the biggest Punisher fan.
Yeah,
I'm
I was very nervous
because of the creative team. And I think it worked for both of us, even though it's like a whole Jack Spratt situation.
And it's just impressive to get floored by a character that you've known for so long. You know, the fact that I'm not outraged, I'm impressed about what's happened. You know, like I can't believe what this is going to mean for the character. And how
I love that as a pull quote for the cover of the trade collection. I was not outraged. There you go. Speaking of not outraged, I'm actually delighted about our next section, which is my favorite section because you all make it up. It is your audience questions. And for audience questions, I already see a bunch of them over here in Crowdcast under Ask a Question. If you're watching on YouTube, you can drop them in the comments section. So I got to figure out how computers work, Pete, at some point. You know what I'm talking about? Why don't we go to the questions here? We got one from Jolene. Are there any fears or worries that Moon Knight will follow the long line of Hollywood adaptations that mostly erase or ignores the Jewish heritage of the main character? Feels like outside of Magneto and never comes up in these adaptations. Probably.
Wait. What? You know, you're Jewish.
Oh, okay.
Right? So how do you feel?
Are you saying classic podcast character Alex Albin, it comes up all the time?
Is that what you're gonna get?
No, you know, honestly, like, Moon Knight is one of those characters, to be quite honest, that I think it's fine. Like, I like the fact that he's Jewish, but it's never, aside from some more recent books or some more glaring examples where it's like, all right, calm down, buddy, really been the biggest part of the character. Like, there are other characters that are more explicitly Jewish, like Kitty Pryde walking around with a Jewish star. Ben Grimm, not really. It's only tangentially mentioned. There's not a lot of Jewish characters anyway. But I don't know. There are things like, for example, I think Kate Kane Batwoman is a good example of someone that I was kind of bummed that they didn't erase, but they generally left off that part of her character because it felt like a bigger part in the comic books. Moon Knight is something that, if they don't deal with it in the show, as long as he's not like, I love Christmas and I celebrate every Christmas as a Christian, it's not going to really bother me that much. There's enough other things that are going on with Moon Knight that I think it'll be fine, personally. So there you go. We got one from YouTube. Nelson Martinez says, who was
I just want to say, I hope he's super Jewish. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, just like,
keep going. What are you about to say, Pete? Where are you going with this? Here again, like, not to spend too much time on this, but I do think there was a very specific example of they added a character on Fear the Walking Dead. And mind you, it was a rabbi character. But it's the sort of thing that when they got to that and he was a rabbi character, he was hiding out at a synagogue. I was like, oh, right. I've been watching these shows for 11 years and there are no Jews. That's weird. And even though it was like the most over the plate example of adding a Jewish character, I legitimately felt like, as a person who has spent an extraordinary amount of time watching Walking Dead, Fear the Walking Dead, Walking Dead World Beyond, reading the comics, all these things, I was like, oh, I actually do feel I understand what representation means now watching this, because I am seeing a character who is being treated well. They are a fun character to watch. They bring something different to the show. And the absolute best decision they made, frankly, on Fear the Walking Dead was when they introduced the rabbi character. There was another character played by Mo Collins who was like, yeah, I'm Jewish. What are you talking about? I'm also Jewish. So it was like they added this rabbi character, then a character who you didn't know was Jewish the entire time revealed that they were Jewish. It was like, yeah, I'm the same person. I'm Jewish. Now that we have this rabbi here, maybe we'll do some, you know, like prayers and stuff and celebrate Rosh Hashanah. But that was perfect, because you got like both of those sides, the more casual Moon Knight type thing of like, oh yeah, also they're Jewish. But also you got more explicitly to be able to talk about stuff like this. So Stray Bullet is calling me out for talking about Walking Dead. My point here is that I think there's different types of representation that you can do, and there are explicit representations and non-explicit representations, and both of them are fine from a comic reader's perspective. As long as it's somewhat true to the source material, I think it's going to be okay. Why don't we go over to YouTube? Nelson Martinez says, who wins the fantasy battle between Nelson? Guardians of the Galaxy and Vox Machina? Also, did you get a chance to see Vox Machina yet, Pete? Whew, glad I didn't get asked that question.
Yeah, no, I have not. Damn it. I dropped the ball on that. What is that on?
Vox Machina? I believe that's Prime Video.
Oh, man. Oh, yeah. Damn it. Yeah, it's the animated that I've been dying to see. Mm-hmm. God damn it. You know, I was fucking around the other day going, there was something I'm supposed to be watching, and I couldn't figure it out, and now it just clicked for me. God damn it. All right. I've written it down on my calendar.
Wait,
here.
The thing you're supposed to remember to watch, that's Adventures of Power, right? Call back. To answer your question, Nelson, I don't know. Guardians of the Galaxy, that's the one that I've seen. They would win. They seem pretty powerful. We got a question here from Edward Doherty. What generally good but too often used concepts or story tropes in comics should be retired or left alone for a period? Ooh. Great
question.
The thing.
It's, you know, sometimes when things get, you know, like starting in the middle of action and then you flash back to a little bit more of an origin story, like just when they get old, sometimes they find a new way to do it to really realize why it's great in the first place. So it's hard to be like, oh man, this trope, because there's a lot of people who can find creative ways to kind of dust it off and make it new again. You know, it all really depends on how good the idea is, how good the writing is, and how well it's executed. But I'm trying to think of I'm a sucker for tropes, you know what I mean? I guess I'm the wrong person to ask, because I love a good will they, won't they. I love a good, like, starting in the middle of action and then give me the boring story part.
Wait,
you
just said you don't like that.
Well, I'm just saying it's a trope that's overused. That doesn't mean that I don't like it. This
is a very specific comic book one that drives me a little nuts, just because I can always see it happening every time. But invariably, when they introduce a proactive superhero team where they're like, you know what, we're tired of always chasing after the criminals after they've already done stuff. Let's be proactive. Let's go out and, like, we'll get them, prevent things before they happen. That's always the first arc of the book. The second arc of the book invariably is that team gets attacked in their headquarters by some supervillains. Every single time. I don't know why this happens, but it drives me insane, because they introduce it, which is already like not enough people actually know how to do proactive. I think a good example of a proactive team, X-Men Red by Tom Taylor, was great and actually did it correctly and did not follow up with the second arc where they're attacked in their headquarters. But every single time that happens, and it drives me a little insane. There's
obviously... Well, that's just karma. That's karma. You put something out there like that, you're going to get bitten in the ass. You know what I mean?
100%.
Yeah.
Let's see. This is from Kevin. DC's announced another set of 16 potential titles, only one of which will make it to publication. In that spirit, what are some announced, proposed, but never released comic titles that you really wish had been made? To elaborate further, on what Kevin is saying. They had a thing last year called Round Robin, where they had a bunch of Robin titles. We ended up with Robin's, the Tim Seeley book that we talked to Tim about.
Which was amazing.
So good.
I mean, come on.
This time, there are a bunch of non-Robin titles. There are other things from throughout the DC universe. They all seem like very fun, specific concepts, excuse me, but only one of them is going to actually get done. So what do you think? Is there anything that hasn't been finished that you would like to see? Edward Doherty called out Gaiman's Miracle Man run should have been finished. Yes. Given that they seem to be introducing Miracle Man in some way into the Marvel Universe upcoming, maybe they will.
Oh.
What about you, Pete?
I don't know. There's nothing like that's hitting me off the...
Oh, Pete froze. Well, that's it. It's solo show for Alex time.
Oh, no, I froze.
Oh, you froze. You're back. You're back.
What? Okay, great. No?
Cool.
Still froze?
No, no, you're there. You're good.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah, I don't know nothing off the top of my head.
Okay, great. I will say it was hard to vote for that stuff, but there was one book called Captain Carrot and His Best Friend Darkseid, where I was like, well, that's going to win.
Oh, wow.
Right?
That just sounds... Putting those two characters together sounds insane, but...
It's like the Odd Couple of comics.
I would read it, yeah.
Yeah. From Stray Bullet, Jason Aaron talked about writing comics he likes. What comic would you write if you could write any comic currently running or a new property?
That's easy. I would write Punisher.
Mm. Wow, you would take the job away from Jason Aaron. That's wild.
Oh, shut the fuck up. I would clearly let him... do his thing and then patiently wait for my turn and then write a small little adorable Punisher story.
Gosh, what would I write that's currently running? A Squirrel Girl book. That would be fun.
Yeah.
There you go. That's what you could have predicted that. We got a question here from YouTube. A la Abigail Blossom, do you guys one or two shots of butter in your pint of beer? This is a reference to this week's Riverdale, where one of the characters said the beer was too tangy, I believe, and needed a little more butter.
Butter beer, you know?
Yeah.
I thought it was a Hogwarts shot out at first, but
I think it was. I looked it up after the episode because I was like, the character's from the 1600s or something like that. I was like, did people do that? But I think it was actually a Hogwarts shot out because she's magical.
Oh, cool. I thought just, you know, in general, people had more like lard in their drinks. You know what I mean?
I mean, it just kind of sloughed off in there for the most part. You know what I'm talking about?
Yeah, I do.
It's just around. There's a lot of fat.
It's just laying around. It gets in the beer.
100%. All right, guys, we're going to wrap up your audience questions.
Well, I just wanted to shout out somebody putting in a Cheryl question in the Q&A. I appreciate that. I mean,
absolutely.
Shoney's gonna happen. It's slowly but surely working its way back in, and it's gonna be amazing.
Oh my goodness, you're gonna bring this in every podcast. We're gonna turn every podcast into a Riverdale podcast. All right, why don't we move on to our next section, which is trivia, and for that we're gonna turn it over to Pete LePage.
Oh, sorry, I was booing Jolie. All right, hey, Zubs, do we need a volunteer? Do we got somebody?
We need a volunteer today. So if anybody would like to do trivia, ideally on Crowdcast, raise your hand or say, hey,
first
or me.
Up.
But on YouTube, you can comment as well. It just is a little delayed and awkward. But if anybody wants to do it, just let us know.
We haven't had Sarah without an H on, have we?
Well, you don't want to bully anybody into doing
it,
but you are going to get a $25 gift card to Midtown Comics. I'll also drop the link here in the chats if anybody wants to sign up in advance. I was just running very slow today, and I did not email anybody.
Hey, so it happens. I remember the time I forgot to do it, you know what I mean?
Yeah, there you go. Well, I'll tell you what, if we don't get a volunteer, as we talked about last week, we will all compete $25 for charity.
Or it's on YouTube if you want. Or yeah, you just don't want to do the relay?
No. There's just nobody raising their hands.
Okay.
So I'll tell you what. I'm going to do it, Pete. I'm going to do it.
All right.
$25 for charity. What's a good charity these days? What's going on? Nothing really happening in the world, I guess. You know what? I'll just take $25 to Midtown Comics. No, I'm kidding. I'll look up something. Pablo mentions the Hero Initiative. That might be a good one. We'll find something good, and I will tweet out where we send it to. But Pete, hit me.
All right. Today's trivia is on topical comic news and a small nod to the legend, Sally Kellerman, RIP. All right, here we go. Please listen to all three options, Salves, before you make selection. Okay.
Oh, this is going to be hard, actually, because this is the point of the show when I kind of tune out a little bit.
Yeah, that's going to be tough for you. Here we go. And I'm not giving you a hint, so we'll see. Yeah. Yeah, here we go. Question number one. What is the next big DC event? Is it A, Nighttime Crisis, B, Dark Crisis, or C, Eric Roberts? Ooh,
Eric Roberts is a pretty big event in any movie that he's in, but I'm going to go for B, Dark Crisis.
Okay. You are correct, sir. Thank Congratulations. You. Here we go. Question number two. Again, no hints. Tom McFarlane's iconic Spider-Man work is going to be collected in a new blank. Is it A, Wu-Tang album, B, Artist Edition, or is it C, Margaret Cho? Whew.
So it's Wu-Tang. I know Jim Lee's art was collected in a Wu-Tang album, so I feel like that, but I'm going to go for B again. I'm going to say B. Yes.
B is correct. Wow. All right. Okay. Here we go. Last one. In Avengers Forever, number five. I almost said Avengers Five Ever.
Just Girls Five Ever. Hilarious, coming back.
Group. But anyways, Paula Penn is just magical. Anyways, who is taking over all of the roles? And we're talking about the next Avengers Forever, number five. Is it A, Man Bun, B, Man Thing, or is it C, Marley Matlin?
Marley Matlin? Is that who you're saying? That's not my answer. I was just checking. Yes, it's B. B again. Wow.
You are correct.
All right. Well, we are going to donate $25 to a charity of my choice. And if you would like to compete in trivia, please sign up at the forum. I swear that I'll actually look at it in advance next time. My bad. Meanwhile, new comic books are coming out all...
Wait,
yes.
Excuse me, I'm sorry.
Yes, what's the secret movie, Pete?
Did you get it? It wasn't very clear. As soon as you heard Eric Roberts, you're like, well, it's not Best of the Best, so it's got to be...
Pretty Woman?
Wow, dude. That's Notting Julia Hill. Roberts. That's Julia Roberts. Yeah, this is the other one. Anyways, I'm talking about the 1996 classic, It's My Party.
Amazing. R.I.P. Hot Lips. Now, new comic books are coming out all the time. Pete, what are you looking forward to that's coming out this week? What do you want to check out?
Well, first off, there's a ton of great stuff coming out. It's a lot to be excited for. I'm looking forward to, and since Justin's not here, I'm going to take a couple extra. I'm looking for Step by Bloody Step number 2, Shadow War Alpha number 1, X-Men Unlimited Latitude number 1,
wow,
and Hulk Grand Design Monster number 1. A lot of number ones.
Lot of number ones. I'm trying to find something that you didn't say that I'm looking forward to.
Yeah, make you
to.
Work a little bit. You know what I mean?
I'm going to say The Harbinger number 6 from Valiant Comics because Faith is back. Great character. Very excited to see her back. Very excited to talk about that book with you. And all of these books, in fact, are going to be in our Stack podcast, which is
what?
In the, I know, Comic
Book
Club.
Don't say!
Feed, and also its own dedicated Stack feed, Wednesdays at 9 a.m. And folks,
unbelievable how that keeps
that
happening.
That is it for this week's show. Thank you so much to our guest, Jason Aaron, for coming on. Don't forget to check out Punisher, Avengers, Avengers Forever, The Goddamn King Conan, and many more things. Next week, we're going to have a packed show. Plaid Klaus is going to be here to talk about Hive Mind. Juan Espinosa is going to be here to talk about Adventures of a System Admin.
Justin Belmont is going to be here to talk about Smokes the Fox and Weaponized Werewolf. So lots of guests, lots of fun.
It seems like a lot.
Just a good time. All right, I'll cut one of the guests, but I won't tell
which
one.
We got
a couple of other things to plug. Riverdale After Dark, a Riverdale podcast, is back, in case you couldn't tell, with Pete talking about Shoddy. Also, Marvel Vision, our Marvel podcast, is back talking about Moon Knight tomorrow.
Woo!
So check out that feed as the episode drops in your ears. If you want to support this podcast and other podcasts we do, patreon.com/comicbookclub, iTunes, Android, Spotify, Stitcher, or the app of your choice to subscribe, listen, and follow at Comic Book Live on Twitter, Comic Book Club Live on Instagram, comicbookclublive.com for this podcast, and many more. Until next time, good night.
Thanks, everybody. Happy birthday, Sarah McDonald. Happy belated birthday.